Hello everyone, I'm Ben Morton and welcome back to the podcast. This is the show where we dig into the art and science of leadership through interviews with MDs, CEOs and other senior leaders. In doing so, we are trying to discover, decode, identify all of the things that we can do to become even better leaders, to better serve our organisations and those people that we have the privilege and responsibility to lead. In this episode, episode number 6, I'm joined by Shelley Butler, who is the CEO of Dovico, a Canadian-based company that builds time and cost tracking software. My conversation with Shelley went really deep, really quickly, and you'll no doubt sense from my reaction and tone that I was pretty caught off guard by the scale of her openness and vulnerability. Shelley spoke a lot about leading with love, ensuring your teammates are really okay and that your direct reports really know that you've got their backs. This episode may challenge you at times, and it actually may test some of your assumptions and beliefs, which I think is absolutely fantastic. So, having teased you enough, enjoy my conversation with Shelley Butler, CEO of Dovico. So, hey, Shelley, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Ben. I am feeling honored to be here with you today.
Amazing. And for those that don't know you, to start, just tell us whereabouts we are finding you in the world right now.
Okay, so I am the CEO of Dovico Software. We do project tracking software. I'm actually just a new CEO there. I've been with Dovico Software for 19 years, and I've been kind of Eve's right-hand gal for quite some time and had a number of roles there as vice president. I was COO. At Dovico, we lead without a title. You know,
amazing.
You and I met, Ben, at Robin Sharma, and you know, a lot of my philosophies really are from Robin. Of course, it's grown from there quite a bit, but I loved to have that leadership without a title. I loved that service aspect. And really, in 2013, after that very first Titan, we started to change Dovico. And we made sure that we honored those philosophies, a lot of them, and really found out that they were, you know, not only tried, tested, and true at Dovico, but we were able to expand on them. And for me, that's where my leadership went. It no longer was about power and dictatorship. It was truly all about service.
Amazing. So already there's so many things that I want to pick up on and ask you about from what you've just said. The first one, again, for those who've not maybe come across any of Robin Sharma's work, what does, like, for you, what is your interpretation of leading without a title, and what does that mean to you? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, what that truly means to me is that everybody within our organization is the CEO. You are the CEO of what you do. You are the CEO of your entire body, mind, and soul. Make sure that you lead it well. Make sure that you honor it well. You know, I really wasn't sure what to expect, but when I went into my very first Titan Summit and I walked through those doors and I listened to that music going off and the lights hitting us, I not only felt a lack of self-worth to be in that room, but I was so overwhelmed in that moment that I wasn't even sure that I was going to have able to grasp what anybody was telling me, to tell you the honest truth, because I was overwhelmed. And like I say, I was not feeling worthy to even be there. And I remember Eve looked at me from across the way, and he said, and Eve Doucette is the owner of Dovico Software. And Eve actually said to me, to the front of the room, run to the front of the room. And I thought, what are you, like, I don't feel worthy to be in the room, let alone run to the front of the room. But I did. I ran to the front of that room. And when Robin Sharma came out into that stage, he asked us to get up and share a secret, to whisper in each other's ears. He said, actually, for the next 4 days, we're going to live our truth. And I want you to get up, and I want you to, do you remember that? I want you to whisper a secret. I don't know if you were there that year, but whisper a secret into each other's ear. And in that moment, my head rang and it said to me, you know, deep down from within my core, because I thought, oh my God, I can't even talk to these people yet, let alone get up and whisper my secret. But my voice, whatever that was, said to me, you're going to forgive your rapist. That's what it said.
Wow.
And I wasn't feeling very strong, but it all had started. Everybody was getting up and they were whispering secrets, to which I did. I went over and I'll never forget her. I looked into her eyes and I did. I whispered in her ear, I'm going to forgive my rapist. To which she responded, I'm going to forgive my brother-in-law who killed my sister 2 weeks ago. I'm going to forgive my brother-in-law who killed my sister 2 weeks ago. Like, are you kidding me? I knew 130 of us in that room were feeling some kind of pain. Yeah. We were all dealing with the story. We were all probably dealing with the lack of self-worth. But everybody in that room's title was a leader.
Yeah.
They were leader. They were coaches. They were the best of the best in that room. But in that moment, I never felt so comfortable. I never felt so loved. And I never felt so protected. It was the weirdest feeling. I knew nobody. I didn't know you, you know? But I think you can probably even identify that yourself being there. Man, the people that surrounded you, you didn't know what they did for a living, really. You didn't know what their net worth was. That really wasn't the main game in that room. Nobody, who cared? Mm-hmm. What we really was able to show is people love and compassion. And that's where my story began. I knew that to be a true leader, I needed to share my truth and show my truth, allow people that surrounded me, the great people that surrounded me in, and the ones that were negative, to let them go in some way, to find some way.
Yeah, so that's fascinating, Shelley. And I hadn't necessarily planned on going down this line of questioning, but so what you just shared is pretty incredible to share on a podcast to people who don't know you. And you and I have got to know each other reasonably well, albeit really sort of spending 4 days with each other every year for the past 4 years. But you could argue that we don't know each other that well. And what you've just shared about standing up at that conference, whispering to somebody, I'm going to forgive my rapist. That's very open. It's very truthful to share that. A lot of people would feel sharing that is far too vulnerable. Yeah. So I'm intrigued. What part does authenticity, vulnerability, sort of deep honesty play in leadership for you? Because it's something it's a journey I've been on. Personally, I talk about as leaders dropping the mask and letting people see the real us. So I'm fascinated to know. It sounds like you're ahead of me on that journey. So what does that look like? What is the experience and impact of doing that been for you as a leader?
Well, I'm going to tell you, it's a beautiful thing. It's actually, I've never felt so free in all my life. The stories that we tell ourselves will absolutely hold us back from doing the great things that we all should do. So, you know, my story began there. And just recently, I actually went to this guy, Baron Baptiste Power Yoga. So the journey continues for me to be authentic and share my truth, because I believe authenticity, being vulnerable, sharing your truth has everything to do with leadership. Mm-hmm. Everything. Absolutely everything. Because if people don't trust you, they will not follow you. And I don't really want anybody following me. I want them arm in arm. I want to be beside people. I want to sometimes follow them. You know, you can get behind, a great leader can get behind a great leader.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so authenticity, sharing your truth, sharing your most vulnerable moments, because I'll tell you what happened. I did not feel worthy to be in that room. I didn't feel worthy to be in the Ritz-Carlton in Toronto, to tell you the honest truth. I thought that across my forehead, it said that I was a dirty girl. It didn't allow me to share my true self with others. And what am I ashamed of? Really, what am I ashamed of? You know what? I was a victim and I decided I was going to be a victim. What I am now is I am a survivor. I'm victorious, you know? I'm no longer a victim. I'm victorious. I am no longer a victim. I am a survivor. So for me to talk about sexual abuse now, instead of hiding behind it, now I can share my story. I can share what it is. I can help the children, you know, and I will speak about that all around the world, free of charge. That is my gift back, but only when I healed, only when I let go of the narratives, then the stories, because it didn't allow me to be a great leader. When you're hiding anything, you can't be a great leader. You're not trustworthy.
Yeah. Amazing. How would you describe your sort of leadership style now? What do you look like as a leader?
Yeah, it's changed. This is water, sodium free. I'm drinking it out of a can though. So sorry, dry. Okay. My leadership style is about making sure other people are leaders. So for me, it really has nothing to do with my leadership style, is to ensure that I can find the light and passion within other leaders. So I have literally hired people as developers. Like I say, run a little software development firm. We do project tracking software. So this software development firm is a lot of, you know, developers. Like, you know what I got? I got, you know, a website. I have, marketing and sales and R&D and like the typical stuff. I hire this developer and he's now a content writer. You know, he liked development, right? So it's about me finding their passion. It's about making sure that they know if they didn't like what they're being hired for and they see another piece that they would like to do, or they want to aspire to be something, to let me know that, right? Let's find the talent. You know, the one thing that we know today is you give joy in the people what they're doing, they will be creative and they will be innovative. You don't have to worry about hiring another developer while you put that guy in content writing.
Yeah.
It's going to pay for itself tenfold. So it's really difficult to get leaders to understand that they already have the power. Like, you're already a leader. You're already like a CEO or a COO or whatever C title you have.
Yeah.
But you already have the power, right? So don't you find a lot of leaders, especially new leaders, are really trying to flex their muscle for some reason? They're really, So as opposed to flexing your muscle, understand you already have the power. Become the one that just wants to give that other person light. Because the thing is somebody has to take over that leadership role. You can't be the leader of marketing and sales and admin, and you can't be the leader of everything. So be the leader of your people, be the leader, be the happiness leader. Make sure that everybody is super happy. Find out what's wrong with that dude that's coming in with a frowny face every day. Maybe he's having difficulty paying his mortgage, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Be the leader and find out what it is and help pay the guy's mortgage. Find out what's going on.
I love that. It reminds me of like a number of quotes and phrases from military leaders in my time in the army. Kind of one of the favorites was, you can't manage men and women into battle. You can only lead them, and you lead people, you manage things, which I think is a Peter Drucker quote. But I love the fact that you said, be the leader of people, because it's people that make up a business, right? There isn't anything other than people in a business. You might have some product or inventory, but it's people, right?
It's absolutely. So we are all about people first. That's Dovico, people first. And really that came from Yves Doucet. He came back in 2013 and he went, we're going to do people first. And then we just really started to make sure that people were happy within the organization. This doesn't happen overnight. You know, they talk about Dovico as one of the best culture companies, and we truly are, but we've gone about this far in a million mile road.
Right.
This is all new stuff, right? Now I get it, but I'm going to tell you a little story, a happy story, because we need them now. So for us, we started quite a while ago. Hey, work from where you want to work, from home, from the library, from Starbucks, go ahead. Let's make sure you have a computer at home though. And we set up a VPN and everybody can log in from where they're at, and we're good. You know, we're going to We are a time management company. We're going to trust you with your time. Y'all got deadlines, you know.
Yeah.
You're all adults. Handle it, right? Now, of course, at first it was a little like, where is everybody? It's Friday afternoon. Oh, yeah, we let them work from wherever they want to work from. As long as they meet their deadlines, do we care on what happens on a Friday afternoon? COVID hits.
Yeah, what do we all do?
We all go home. Everybody's already set up. They got their computers. They got a great chair. We made sure that all of that was happening long before COVID ever hit. We never missed a beat. Nobody knew. We never missed a beat. So you may think that having people work from home is a challenge and is costing you. I am telling you, it's costing you big time, because when things like this hit,
yeah,
you're in trouble, because it takes you a while to get set up. For us, no, we didn't. Trust in your people first. You know, of course, you have to have the deadlines in place. And of course, you have to make sure that the revenue stream comes in. Of course you do. But what I'm telling you is, if you make people happy, first and foremost, that revenue stream will continue to come in. Mm. It'll continue to grow. And you will be known as that wonderful leader who is able to make sure that people shined instead of casting that shadow.
Yeah, amazing. So I want to ask you a few more questions about that, if I can. So say, for example, you're a leader or a director of a function, and you have that aha moment like you and Eve did, where you go, actually, we're going to put the people first and trust that the results will then take care of themselves. So if you set out on that journey, but say, for example, you've got to maybe convince some more cynical people in the organization. You've got to convince the board members, or you've got to convince the FD that this approach is right. I'm curious to know sort of how long it started to take before you started to see the benefits of that new approach, or you started to see the benefits of the ROI in inverted commas. And the reason I ask is, and I've fallen into this trap kind of myself over the years, especially when I was doing sort of series of HR director jobs. We can look at a case study of a great company, sort of back in the day when I was working in corporates. It was looking at the likes of Innocent Smoothies and kind of Google, that period in the, I guess, early 90s, where everyone went and put slides in their offices and table footballs because they thought that's what culture was. But we can look at those case studies and read those books of companies who have built great cultures and high performing teams. And we fail to realize that the book is often a 2-year journey, right? And we go and take the book as a 3-month action plan. And 3 months in, we go, oh, I've done everything it says in the book, but like nothing's changing. The needle's not moving. So what was that like at Dovico?
First of all, you have to make a decision that the revenue that you have coming in, if I don't get another new sale, we're fortunate because we have a SaaS company, reoccurring revenue. If we don't get another new sale, we're going to be able to sustain ourselves by just making people happy.
Right.
That's not what I wanted to do. As a leader, I didn't want to have negative revenues. But yeah. I was willing to do it, first and foremost, to make sure that people were first and everybody believed us, we were willing to do it. Mm-hmm. So you have to be willing to perhaps, while you're focusing on your people, to let go of a little bit of a revenue stream.
Right. Okay.
Right. You also have to have the ability to manifest abundance. Mm. You have to have a mindset. You know, now I'm not talking about, I'm not one to say, well, if I put all these crystals in this basket, I'm going to get, you know, like I'm not that. When I say manifest abundance, I truly mean that you have the mindset that this is going to work. Because if you come in every day without the great creative ideas, it will fail. But I'm going to tell you, this worked immediately. This worked immediately. And I'll tell you why it worked immediately is because a great man named Yves Doucet, and he came up with just the smallest little thing. So I was answering the phone one day. He was in my office and we were having a pretty important discussion. We were pretty small at that time, but a pretty important discussion. And the phone rang. And the girl who was answering the phone had gone to the washroom. I seen that she walked. So I answered the phone. I answered the phone. And the guy at the other end, he was really intense and he needed to have support. Right? He was having trouble getting his time in, whatever it was. Now, we had a procedure, a policy. When you answered the phone, you did these certain things. And that's like, you've done those telemarketing calls. You, is this your address? Is this your proper email? And, you know, that kind of check thing, right? Well, this guy's a bit frantic. I make sure that he gets right through to support immediately. I don't ask him anything. Eve says, why didn't you go through, you know, our script? And I said, you know what? That didn't serve that guy. That didn't serve the client. It served Dovaco, but it didn't serve the client at the time.
Right.
Immediately, Eve just went, oh my God, tear up the policy. Tear up the policy. And that's what we were able to do. Not only did we tear up that policy, we tore them all up. We allowed people to think for themselves. We allowed people to rewrite policy. So we, you know what? It happened immediately because it was us. We were leading the company at the time, but it was up to us in that office at the time going, what are we doing scripting out what people are to think? What are we doing? How do we know that they can't do it better? And then he started to bring carrots into the office. That's all we really could afford at the time. So we started putting vegetables in the office. We call it, we started with carrots. So there's vegetables. But if you're into like a, you know, a big bunch of code and you're trying to fix it and you're really hungry, you know, you can go and grab some carrots and some dip and you're good, right? For a minute, supplied a few drinks in the fridge, you know, just little things that we could afford at the time. But what we did was we gave the power back to the front line. We gave the power back to the people. It wasn't what even I thought and what the policy should be, not even their team lead. How do you, you know, I'm going to trust you and I'm going to, you know how to answer the guy on the phone. Like,
so did you have any major bumps in the road when you started tearing up the policies? And did you have anybody who, let's say, sort of took advantage of it in a less than helpful, positive way? Or did you have a great team anyway? So they were all, so you could trust them to operate with less policy and structure around them.
They were brilliant. You know, okay. If I went back and I had to look at, you know, the odd email that came in that maybe had a spelling mistake that the script maybe didn't, you know what? It proved that really real people were behind the other end of the phone. That's all it did.
Yeah.
It was really about making Dovaco more authentic instead of, you know, hi, my name is Carlin. I am here to help you with your support question. You have said the following. Nah, you know what? We started rewarding people for staying on phone calls longer than they needed to, building relationships with customers. People started, support people, can you imagine, started getting chocolates delivered to them. You know, oh, Carl was wonderful. He helped me out. You know, so what it created was it didn't matter whether our software feature that we just came out with was awful. You know, which we don't do that. They're all great. All great. But because we've built that relationship, you know, when we've made a mistake, we've actually got the entire company together for one customer in particular. We got the entire company together and we hearted him. We were like, I'm so sorry. We are fixing it right now. And within a few hours, he had it fixed, right? Wow. So we do stuff like that. When we lead with love. People say, well, Shelley, there's no love in business. It doesn't have anything to do with one another. Well, you know what? It has everything. And no, we didn't have a hiccup. Like I say, there could have been an email that spelled wrong.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a signature got left off. Who cares? You know, who cares?
Yeah. So the other thing that occurred to me when you was talking, you said when the odd message went out or the odd script had, when the odd email went out, with the odd spelling mistake in it, it showed that we are human as a company and there's real people. Do you think that was reliant on you and Eve being so authentic as leaders? Do you think that enabled it? Or i.e. if you and Eve weren't walking the talk and being very open, honest and authentic, do you think that would have put up a barrier, meaning it kind of didn't work elsewhere?
Listen, there is no way. If you are not as authentic as you possibly can be, sharing your deep, darkest secrets, like I just did with you and your audience, there's no way that you can give permission to others to do that. Mm. by you showing your vulnerabilities, by you releasing your shame, by you sharing in your, oh my God, you guys, I made that decision and I blew it and I am so sorry. And I promise I will never do that again. Like, you know, and my gosh, you guys, come into my office. If you know I'm blowing it, like, help me. So it's not really, like I say, you already have the power.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't need to flex anymore. You already got the title and stuff, you know. Now really shine in your truthfulness. Now really shine in your own truth. Even if you think it's horrible. Mm. You know?
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. Yeah. So let me change tack a little bit. I'm looking over to the left. We're doing this on a video call. Looking to the left, yeah, my second screen. As you always do, I've done a little bit of professional stalking/research. I've got your LinkedIn profile up on my other screen. Oh. So I'm looking at your kind of done so many roles within Dovico throughout the years. So what was the most challenging transition from you? Because a lot of people listening will be moving into their first director level job or maybe looking to step into an MD job. Kind of what's some of your learnings and advice that you can share with the audience on that?
I've mentioned it a few times on this call. You already got the title. You don't need to remind people what your title is or what your role is. Mm. Be very graceful and be very grateful of what you have. Try and leave your ego at every door you walk into. Okay. It's very, very difficult, but you edge grace out every time you come in with that ego. So you already got it. You already got the role, right? Now you're of service. Your whole mindset, especially when you're starting, you know, it should last throughout, but especially when you're started, your humbleness and your ability to leave your ego behind and just understand you already have the power. Be of service to others. As you walk into that room, don't worry about what you have to say. As a matter of fact, don't think about anything, if at all possible, but simply listen. The best leaders are the best listeners, right? They're the best listeners. You know, sometimes they say nothing. And what I've realized is the less I say, the better off they are. So there's times when people come into my room, they're like, how many people should I validate for that? What do you think? And I'm like, And they'll continue to talk and talk. They've said their answer. Okay, I'm going to do 50 validations today on that particular feature. And they're like, hey, thanks, Shell, for the chat. See you later, right? Sometimes being in the silence, right? Because what ends up happening, you as a leader, as soon as I throw out a number, as soon as I say, oh, 10 should be enough, and it's not, right? Then it's easy to point the finger at me. But it also takes the win away from you and the accountability. Very first thing you're trying to do is you're trying to be of service to others. You're trying to build leaders. So less words, more love, more support. What I always ensure that people know is I got your back, baby. I got your back, no matter what, even if you blow it. So if somebody comes into my office and they're really nervous about the next thing they're going to do or the pitch they're going to do, I got you. Shelby, let me just show you before I show everybody. No. I want to be just as surprised as everybody, but I promise you I'll have your back. If there's one thing I can do well is I can think on my feet really well. And there's been some terrible things that have happened. People have given some really bad ideas. But do you know what the great thing that's happened out of every terrible idea? Another great idea. It's amazing. Yeah, it always is.
Brilliant. There was another question I was gonna that was the question. So that approach of holding back, speaking less, not speaking at all, letting your team and those in the business speak first. Is that something that came naturally to you, or was it something that you found actually, do you know what, this is really hard, I really want to speak and tell people what I think, but I'm going to force myself? And if it was the latter, if it was hard, how did you retrain yourself to be able to hold back and not tell everyone how smart you are, because I think that's the danger that some of us fall into, right? We think kind of I'm the leader, I need to prove my worth, back to this piece around worth, I need to prove how smart I am, prove I've got all the ideas. Like, how did you overcome? I think it's a natural human instinct, right, to want to speak and go first and answer people's questions. So how did you hold back and stop yourself doing that?
Especially when they're coming into their office and looking for your advice, what would you do? Of course, you're going to give them advice. They've come to the leader for advice. So I knew by having some of my words thrown back at me that blame can be used anywhere. If those around me are pointing and blaming me as a leader, they're probably pointing and blaming their coworkers, the guy who gave them bad code, the guy who sent them the bad support without filling all the proper work in before I gave it to support, right? Mm-hmm. And I knew that that would throw our alignment off what we were trying to do in-house more than anything else. If we started the blame game, right? Yeah. Well, I couldn't get my work done before they got their work done. I couldn't. We would be lost. We would lose our whole team mentality. We would lose our, let me help you out, like our kindness. We would lose our heart. And leading with love has everything to do with heart. So it's not about, Ben, like I was supposed to start on that yesterday. How come you didn't get that done? It's, Ben, can I help you finish that up? Like, you know, is there an issue, or is there something else I can take off your plate to, right? Leading with love has everything to do with making sure that your teammate is okay. Mm-hmm. So I thought, how am I going to get out of this blame game, you know? And it just, I tried little things, but the things that I do is I chew the inside of my mouth.
Right. Okay. So that's super tactical then. Okay.
Super tactical. I'll actually bite my lip. Like if I could show you the inside of this, because with COVID, there's been a lot of things that I want to say, right? Especially to my finance team and whatnot. You know, I want to apply for everything that we can apply for, and I'll deal with it later. Do you know what I mean? The last thing I want to do is lay anybody off or, you know, I mean, things are going well, but who knows, right? So, so I actually I'll go as far as to actually bite the inside of my cheek or the side of my tongue, because I think it's really important for people to discover for themselves. The growth doesn't happen by me telling you how to spell that word of the dictionary. The growth happens by you going to look the word up in the dictionary, right?
Yeah, incredible.
So, yeah, it's all in a growth mindset. It's all making sure that you feel really good. That's about leaving your ego behind, about you feel really good about making that person next to you even smarter than you, giving them the tools that they will actually surpass you and become that much smarter.
Incredible. Thank you. So I'm conscious of time. So I've got a slightly more quick fire questions to ask you at the end. So I know you're a big lifelong learner as well. So what are you reading, studying, kind of learning about right now, or the last kind of book you read? What's that look like for you?
Well, I think I shared it earlier. So this is the last book I read, and it's Journey into Power. I just finished my yoga teacher training. Really odd, you know. So I love to work out. You're in my workout room, actually. And I, we give yoga at work. That's part of, you know, we give yoga lessons at work or yoga classes, just so you can, you know, let it go. And Eve teaches yoga, and he found this Baron Baptiste. Shelly, go to yoga teacher training. It'll be amazing. I was like, I don't want to be a yoga teacher. I lift weights. And he's like, no, you have to go. This guy is amazing in leadership. So I did this 8 days in Sedona, Arizona, 90 degree heat. And I mean, we're talking yoga for hours. But he does this thing called meditation and as well as inquiry. Well, I fell in love with this guy. He was absolutely positively amazing. I came back as a yoga teacher. you know, who knows? But the growth that I experienced there, the stories that I was able to release there that held me back. You know, my grade two teacher, Sœur Légère was her name, and she told my mother I would always be average. But that's okay. I would always be average. And I was always so good with like a C. If I got a C, I was like, oof, well, Sœur Légère always said, I would, you know, that's cool. Like I always figured I'd be average.
Wow.
You know, just little things like that. So learning and discovering and going outside your comfort zone, right? Because this was really uncomfortable. This is, yeah, we're talking yoga every, you know, I mean, I'm doing like weird, like handstands and I'm 53 years old, but I did it all. I did it all and it was amazing. So do things that make you feel uncomfortable and be courageous in doing them and grateful.
Brilliant. And on a very sort of practical day-to-day level, since stepping into the CEO role, is there something you've stopped doing and something different you've started doing because of the new role? What does that look like for you?
No, I'm a big habit girl. As you know, we learned that, you know, through Robin Sharma a long time ago, December 9th, 2014, I started to work out and I started to work out every day. And that's what I do. It's really important that I go up after I work out. I do a little meditation. I journal. Eve Doucette actually has just written a book called I Am a Seed. And it is amazing. He tells his truth within there and allows you to consider perhaps your truth within that story. As soon as I finish meditating and journaling, I go up, I do a lemon, ginger, turmeric, and apple cider vinegar shot. And then I get myself ready for work. I have a really small commute, about 7 minutes. And it's now turned into about 30 seconds less. I just walk down the stairs and here I am in my office.
Great.
But my daily habits are really, really important. My daily mantras are really, really important. My physical health to me is part of my three values, which are love, health, and integrity. I don't think that you can be your very best unless. So Ben, the last time you seen me, I think I was probably 181 pounds. I am now 137 pounds and I've lost that weight. I've been able to maintain that weight now for a couple of years and feel fantastic, fantastic. I gave up wheat and dairy and refined sugars. And those are the things that have really fueled my joy. I didn't realize where I had myself in my own mental state.
Yeah, amazing. So last question I've got for you, Shelley. I think you've answered the first part of this already, but what does a typical day look like for you if one exists? I think I heard early rising, some exercise, some meditation, some mantras and affirmations. Kind of how does the day unfold beyond that?
Yeah, well, you know, for me, it's my mornings are really my time. It's like I say, the time when I meditate, I get my workout in, all of that stuff. And in the evening is spent with my husband of 33 years. So I've been with my husband since I was 15 years old. Our time together is super important. We have a small dog. My daughter is now 24 years old, school teacher. And she is actually online now on YouTube doing Miss Butler's class line because she doesn't have a classroom anymore. But she as well has a service mindset. She's been like that since she was little. Mummy made sure. So my family takes up my evening. My day, as I said, is spent with employees. It's spent making sure that employees and the people that surround me see their light. And probably most important for me is that time that I spend with my partner, my spouse. He is my world.
That's great. It occurs to me to finish up by sharing something. And those who have, certainly those who've done any coaching with me or maybe been on a leadership program I've run will have heard me many times talk about the research done by two Americans, Jim Kouzes and Barry Posner. They wrote the book called The Leadership Challenge. One of the reasons I like their book and research so much is they've now spent over 30 years going out globally asking people what are the characteristics they most look for in an admired leader. And the top four things have never changed over 30 years of research. And one of those in the top four consistently is they want leaders to be inspiring. Now, the way I make sense of and define inspiring to people when I'm working them with is that leaders who are inspiring leave everybody that they meet with more energy than when they met them. And the reason I thought to share that, so we're recording this at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, UK time, 2.5 weeks into sort of COVID-19. And I'm honest, I felt fairly tired coming onto the school. It's been a busy day and a busy two and a half weeks. But I feel massively energized and inspired from sitting talking to you. My energy's lifted. I've probably said more amazing, brilliance and fantastics in this last hour than I've said in the last week. And that's the sign of a great leader, right? So thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. You've inspired and energized me. I'm sure you'll have the same effect on everybody that's listening. So thank you so much for your time. It's been amazing.
Thank you, Ben. I'm grateful to be on your podcast, and I look forward to doing it again.
So there you have it, folks, my interview with Shelley Butler, the CEO of Dovico. In my view, that was an absolute masterclass in servant leadership. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you got great value from it. And if you did, it would be amazing if you could share the episode via your social media, as it helps us grow the podcast and enables us to keep bringing you more and more episodes. If you've not grabbed them already, remember to sign up by typing www.ben-morton.com/podcast directly into your web browser, and we'll email you details of all future episodes, as well as a beautiful visual summary of the first 5 episodes. Take care, folks. See you in the next one, and lead on.